distribution level basis, muck with that script and have it do useful things, like say, convert to HTML.
Or run an
indexer. Now there was a project that was trying to do something like this. It was called Scrollkeeper. And there was a lot of talk about Scrollkeeper a few years back. And I kind of thought they were going to solve this problem, and all I had to do was solve my one little piece of it, which is translating man pages. But the scroll keeper people seem to have disappeared, so it looks like I'm going to have to take on the whole problem, because nobody else seems to care about it much. So that's my rant about documentation, and what I'd like you to take away from it is, A, we have a competitive requirement. If we're going to go up against people like Microsoft, that we be able to produce documentation that is packaged and indexed at least as slickly as they're doing. And that means, in this day and age, we need to present HTML, we need to present it through a browser, and we need to find some way to take all our traditional content and our traditional formats and automatically map that stuff over, because moving it by hand is too hard. And so I want you all to start thinking in those terms. When you hear, when you see man install come out, start using it on your projects. Jawbone your friends to use it on theirs. We need these pieces of infrastructure in place before we can solve the really big problems.
Eric, at OSCON last year, when you talked about this idea, the way you presented it to me was, if you look at how things work in Linux today, the documentation you get is a function what tools you use.
Yes.
Right. And that's just wrong.
Yes, right.
And so the comment you made to me, which is why I thought it would be great to address this audience, is whether the user types man or fires up a browser,
right,
or in the application hits F1,
right,
you want it to all be part
should
of
a all be going to the same database.
Documentation hierarchy. And that's the thing that I couldn't see how to bridge. Man versus browser, that sounds to me like granted, there's a lot of complexity in it.
So I'm just biting off a piece I know how to solve.
But going back to Eric's point about, where's the competitive barrier? The competitive barrier, as I see it, is that this, these guys have done one thing right with their centralized model, which is, make the documentation available independent of the tool you use to access it.
And the other thing I'd like you to take away is, there is really only one candidate for a master documentation format that we can generate high quality HTML and print from, and that's XML Backlog. And I want to basically jump on you all to go back to your projects and your friends and say, start moving your documentation there now. That's where we need to be. A lot of projects are already doing this. The Linux kernel is doing this. Apache is doing this.
I don't want to be wounded in wine, for example. And I have to agree with Alexander on this one, that XML in general, it's too heavy on markup and gets too much in the way of documentation.
It's got problems, but
yes.
there's no alternative.
But my point I'm trying to make, I'm trying to be argumentative, but my point is that if you depend on the fact that everybody is gonna switch over to the phone format, I think that the effort is bound to fail. Because I'm pretty sure there are gonna be people that are not gonna be doing that.
Well, there are people who are not gonna be doing that, and we'll just have to leave it behind.
No, I can actually suggest a compromise. The restructured format, which is something when you type the stuff in, you put in basic markup stuff, it's actually storing it as XML, which you can then export as possible. And so it's really, I've been getting the guys in my work to do basic ASCII text documentation, and we slap it on this form website, and then we pull it out, and it becomes docker.
Right.
It's relatively quick, and it's, if you're writing your stuff in text anyway, then it's fine.
Right. Again, my only comment is that it's the effort plays the sense that people that are not going to be doing that are going to be, are not going to be part of it. You won't have the one centralized database of information.
See, this is why I want to subvert man. Because that way, we can have man go look at the central database, and anybody who for whatever political or ideological reasons, wants to stay behind the man page land, they can, they do, notifying people about publishing a release of notifying people about it, That would drive me nuts if I had to do it by hand. In fact, it was driving me nuts. So I decided to try and automate the process. And what I ended up writing is a program called Shipper, which is an intelligent shipping agent that knows about deliverables and delivery channels. Here's the kind of thing that Shipper knows. Shipper knows that README, any file named README in the directory or where it runs, is a stock deliverable which should be shipped to websites but not to FTP sites. Shipper knows that if you have specified fresh meat as a destination, it should take the most recent entry out of your spec file change log, bundle that up into a fresh meat release notification, and then go talk to fresh meat's XML RPC interface and post a new release announcement. Because I wrote Shipper, I never have to update fresh meat entries by hand. I never have to do this. I just tell Shipper, fresh meat is a destination, and I'm done. Okay? And this gets us in the role of special channels. There are two kinds of channels. There are the channels that are generic HTML and FTP web locations, and there are the special channels. A channel that's an HTTP URL, Shipper knows what that means. Shipper knows that that means that this is a project web directory that you want to update when you do a release. And it knows what the deliverables that go to that directory are. It knows, for example, that if there's anything with an HTML suffix in the directory at the time you run Shipper, copy it up there. It also knows that README should go there because you probably want to have a link to the text README on your site. It also knows that changelog should go there, in a file called changelog, because you probably have a link to that in your web pages and you want people to see it. It also knows that tarballs should go to websites, and if there is no RPM, one should be built from the tarball in the spec file, and that should be shipped too. On the other hand, FTP drop sites are a lot simpler. The Shipper knows that if you have an FTP drop site, there is only three things that should go there. A tarball, a source RPM, and a binary RPM. You're done. Now we get into special sites. It's not really active anymore, but I have a special site called Red Hat. This is a destination. And if you specify Red Hat as a destination, that means that the following things should go in the Red Hat drop site. A source RPM, a binary RPM, and an LSM file that we, generated from the spec file. Again, the objective is to get completely away from doing things like having to manually hack LSM files every time you do a drop. This is what we have computers for, people! Okay? And the forward direction of evolution for Shipper is to add new special channels. For example, one that I added recently is Berlioz. I have a couple projects on Berlioz. People familiar with that? It's a hosting site in Germany. It's somewhat SourceForge-like. I like to use it because they support subversion repositories. I'm a fan of subversion. So I have a Berlioz special destination, and when I tell Shipper that the destination, one of the destinations for this package is Berlioz, it knows that it should upload RPMs and tarballs and stuff to this directory here, made from the project name, and it should upload all the web-related stuff, the HTML pages and the readmes, the other text deliverables, to this directory over here, which is the project web page. And the only thing that's left for me to do after Shipper has run is to go to the project page and say, yes, these files are part of a release, now go put it on the server. And I'd like to automate that, and I will as soon as they have something like an XML or a PC interface for doing those releases. And I'd like to add more special channels. And one of the special channels I want to add is Fedora. And that gets to our third topic, the big, nasty, explosive one. Yes?
Do you have one for Salesforce?
No. If somebody could tell me an automated submission procedure for making a release work on SourceForge, I would love to have SourceForge.
You don't need Java.
What?
Java.
Cool. Find me afterwards. We'll talk about this. I'd love to implement that. Now that I've presented this, is there anybody here who has trouble seeing the utility? There's another kind of channel. There's another kind of channel, which is a mailing list. And the way channels are described by URLs, if it's an HTTP URL, then it's a website channel. It's all those deliverables. If it's an FTP channel, it gets the FTP deliverables. If it's a mail to a URL, it's a mailing list deliverable. And what it'll do is it'll automatically extract a release announcement from from your spec file, and possibly using a template for the release announcement, which you can customize. And then it will automatically ship to all of the mailing lists that you specified as destinations. So the other thing that you automate is your release announcements to all the relevant mailing lists. And it's so wonderful never having to do any of this by hand anymore. But as I said, the SourceForge is actually number one on my list of special destinations I want to add. Number two is Fedora, and that gets into the issue of, well, there isn't any even a definition of the Fedora channel. That's part of the reason we're all here. So now I want to talk about the messy topic of how Fedora looks on the outside. And this is the original reason, as I said, that they asked me to come up here, because I sent a flame to Michael and he said, oops. First I want to rehearse a little history. I've been a Red Hat user for a long, long time. I think it's actually pushing 10 years. Way back when, before the Linux kernel had modules, I actually wrote part of the Red Hat's installation machine. It was a script at one time that would help you pick the appropriate kernel image for the combination of devices. I wrote that because I was having hardware problems, and I had to go through a whole bunch of different images trying to get the install work. I got fed up with doing it by hand, wrote a script to do it, said, nobody should have to solve these problems twice, and shipped it to Aerotron, and went, cool. And that was the beginning of a relationship with Red Hat, which has mostly been pretty happy until quite recently. I have to say that as a really long-time Red Hat user who's attached to it, not least because that's what I know how to administer, unfortunately, I recently found that I had reached the point where I couldn't take it anymore. I stuck with Red Hat because I thought the whole concept of yum and immediate incremental updates from repositories was a wonderful idea and a very promising one. The problem is, the whole repository situation has been a mess for 2 years now. Nobody knows where to submit stuff, how to get packages into repositories. Even people like me who were really persistent and do the research can't figure out what set of repositories to use. There's the Fedora repositories over at Red Hat, and there's Fedora US over here. I'm not sure who's running those. I'm not sure how they relate to the Fedora things at Red Hat. And then there's Livna, which everybody says isn't a Fedora repository, but it works with them really closely. Except, which repositories does it depend on? Huh? I'm so confused. You can't even figure out what the right set of things to have your yum.com is. And on top of that, I recently discovered that there were some things going on in the repositories that were outright broken, like packages that were not cryptographically unsigned, that were not cryptographically signed in places where unsigned packages should not be. because, among other things, well, it's not just their security hazards, they break Yum. Yum, by default, won't install those things, and if it trips over one, it'll sort of cough and go, eh! And if this happens in the middle of a 100 package update, as an administrator, I get pretty cute. And so I flamed Michael about it, and Jack of Boot Bowl invited me up here to do my flaming in public. And for any of you who are associated with the Fedora projects, you have been doing a job of communication to the outside world that I can only describe as shitty. Really bad. We've ended up in a situation where everybody on the inside of the Fedora project thinks that things are documented in such a way that people outside the Fedora project can understand them. This belief is false. Okay? I'm a battle-scarred veteran. I've been around the track how many times? I've been a Red Hat user for 10 years. When I want to solve these problems, I go out and I do real research. And then I write down the results and publish them sometimes. If I can't figure out how this thing's supposed to work, 99% of the rest of the people in the world are going to be terminally confused and upset, and they're going to migrate off to another distribution. The way I told Mike I was on the point of doing, he said, have a little patience, we're getting our stuff together, and FUDCON is part of the process. So I came up here to vent and hear what's going on, and to experience some hope that you guys might actually interact with. But for those of you who are still with the project, I don't have a lot of patience left. We screwed around for 2 years and didn't solve these problems. I'm not going to wait another 2 years. So, fair warning.
And don't worry, you're not alone.
So, that is pretty much the rant I wanted to issue. And I want to tie two pieces of my presentation together by saying that one of the ways that I will know that things are improving is when somebody from the Fedora project comes to me and says, here is the procedure that you can code into Shipper so that you have a Fedora delivery channel. That is a good nitty-gritty test for all of you in the Fedora project to consider. When you have your submission process sufficiently well designed, so sufficiently well specified, I should say, that I can put it in my Python code and have people push a button and it will happen, then we will know that things are improving. Yes?
So, you're saying that Fedora, I mean, with the Linux kernel, you're saying that anyone should be able to contribute anything they want to Fedora?
No.
You should know how to do it.
I should know how to do it.
Right. How do you get into the CIA? Well, you can provide this authentication, you can provide these letters and records, and you can go in with this escort, and that's how you do it.
Yep.
Can you do it? I don't know.
Now, I'm not saying that anybody should be able to push a button on Shipper and drop anything into the distribution. The point is, the combination of Shipper and whatever credentials are appropriate should be automatic.
Yeah, come to the panel discussion later today in the evening, where we're going to announce some really interesting things about how Fedora is going to work in the future, and it addresses most of your issues, I should
think. You couldn't keep me away with wild horses.
All right.
I'm assuming from what you're saying that for those people who are not able to use this directly, there should be another outreach where you get some other repositories that's officially sanctioned.
If the project design were up to me, I would have a series of repositories that were essentially graded by trust. The most open ones would be things that anyone could drop an RPM into, but they wouldn't they probably wouldn't show up on any CD of it. It would be Fedora users, a random Fedora user's choice, whether they wanted to put that untrusted repository on their list. And that would grade up through stages to a core repository that you need a lot of credentials to access. But the point is, the submission process that should be automatable for any of them once you have the proper credentials.
What you're describing, Chipper, would really be helpful if you think you maintain a package?
Well, everybody would have a copy, but only the maintainer of the package would have the credentials to use it in a particular instance.
But even before things on the credentials of the maintainer, could that be a question?
Yeah, sure. I don't see how
it happens today.
Yeah. Yeah. The point of Shipper isn't to make a gross change in the way that we do our release engineering. It's just to remove the friction in the manual area. Yeah?
The one slight problem I see with Shipper is that it composes quite a bit of workflow and quite a bit of structure. That's your particular structure of the problem. I'm not sure, for example, I know a lot of projects with ownership or spec files, so, you know, necessarily one would be a problem.
That is a weakness. One of the things that I would very much like to have is, I would like to have the ability to, I've done the research and I've discovered that the control files for Debian packages have almost the same metadata in them, and where they don't have the same metadata that can be patched around. I would like to enhance Shipper so that it can be driven from a Debian control file. That wouldn't be difficult in principle. All I need is a collaborator from that world who is interested in the problem.
What about making Shipper? I mean, clearly anybody that does releases has their own set of ways to do releases. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I do a change like Tango,
I try to stick to rules that are pretty generic. There are rules of the form. These are the destinations that want an RPM. These are the classes of destinations that want an RPM. These are the classes of destinations that want web pages. These are the class of destinations that want things like reading and changelog and so forth. At the moment, there isn't really a hook structure. I could add one without too much difficulty if I was convinced there was a good way to specify hooks. What kind of thing are you thinking about?
I guess, you know, I don't want to just do tentacle substitution version numbers for base announcement. I want to do some more complicated type of processing.
Oh, well, it has some facilities that I haven't talked about. One of those is that if you give it a template for a project web page with the right name, it will generate a web page from that template and then ship it. You can also specify your own templates for email release announcements and for a couple of other things. So if that's the kind of thing you're talking about, I'm already supporting that.
Yeah, I guess one thing is just, you know, sort of ability to, it just seems like that, you know, if I want to improve big letters in Tango now, I don't necessarily have to go and make some presentation.
You're not really being specific enough.
Okay,
if at some point you'll tell me what you need to do.
I'll have to go download it and take a look at what it is now. How it is now to see. Yeah, it's a very interesting kind of thing because I'm notorious for like saying I've written down with one version number of them. But, without actually seeing exactly what you want to do, you know, raise it, I can hardly get out of the
question. I have written a very comprehensive fan page on it. So if you read the fan page. Well, exactly. Hey, the master's an XML doc book. So it's actually, no, seriously, people. I told you I maintain 38 projects now. The masters for all of them are in doc book, no exceptions. Yeah.
More to Laura's point, one thing that I noticed in the body is that a lot of maintainers don't do packing either RPM or JVM.
Right.
And those are done by other people. So
right.
That's why I was saying that a lot of projects don't have a spec or a dev file
inside the main dartboard, the one that, that comes from the maintainer, that we are the project to maintain. So that's what I was saying, that, that, that it seems like you, you depend a lot on having such a file.
That's correct, isn't
it? Right. So maybe that is good for 90% of the packages out there,
right.
Would be great, but I don't know.
Yeah, I part of the reason I did that, there are two reasons I did that philosophically. One is that spec files happen to concentrate a lot of the metadata you want in the right place. And so it made sense from a sort of information design point of view to be driven off of that. The other reason is that I've never actually quite understood why the tarball distribution shipping function and the binary packaging function are separated in a lot of people's minds. It seems to me,
it's called dependencies.
What?
It's called dependencies. I think people who do stuff off tarballs, they just assume that you know your system looks like my system, and I don't have to say what my system looks like.
Oh, I
see. Just like make and go.
I see.
With RPM, I got to tell you what my system, you know, is expected. And
from the distribution maintainer, you can categorically state that you download all the tarballs, build and install them all, it is what totally loads.
The bigger problem is that, again, I will take an example for one, for example. Alexandria is overworked as it is, right?
Yeah.
So he doesn't want to have to go through the building of binaries and so on. And building binaries requires actually that you have all distributions available so that the resulting binary learns from a large number of installations. So maintainer just refuse to do the work.
Yeah. In principle, you're absolutely right. In practice, I have found that for all of the projects for which I ship RPMs, I've never run into a problem. Not once have I had somebody come back to me and say, this RPM is no good.
It really depends on the management of the project. I mean,
you're talking about the process with the tarball goes from one guy to another. And you're not all going to ship this whole asset.
Right.
Just the final guy himself.
Why can't
he make a spec file?
Why can't shipper take a mail to the packager?
Yeah, I could do that.
And then the packager gets the appropriate drop, and then the packager packages it and uses shipper to then send it to the distributions.
Yeah. That could work.
We have probably around 5 packages that have for whatever.
Yeah.
4 or 5 packages. It's typically a more distributed process.
I think what you're talking about is having. More than one person using shipper, but they're using it in different ways.
Right.
The first guy is using it to notify the packager.
Correct.
Packagers each then are using it to deliver it in the ways that they deliver it, which is that thing.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
The whole point described is a young in reverse.
That's actually not a bad analogy at all.
Extend what you were thinking to like having tarballs moving back and forth between people, mailing back and forth developers.
Yeah.
You end up with a process. We can have a conf directory and a couple of conf files for each site or for whatever it is specifically.
That's a logical extension of what shippers designed to do.
Then maybe someday put it on the board process.
Well, actually, there are actually 3 things right now that for different reasons I want to get into Fedora Core 4. One of them is Doclifter and Manlifter. One of them is Shipper, because I'd like people to start experimenting with that and extending it and improving it in a serious way. And the third thing is GPSD, which I could talk about. Should I talk about GPSD?
Yeah, 3 minutes.
Oh, okay. This is one of my current pet projects is GPSD, which is a service daemon that monitors the serial of USB ports on which GPSs are living, and then takes that information and republishes it to a well-known internet port so that applications like Kismet, GPS Drive, GPQV, and all the other mapping and board routing applications can see it. It's a fun little project. I kind of like to get it into four, not because I think it's a big issue for desktop systems, but it should definitely be in a laptop tray. Again? What?
Version of what?
That's pretty solid. Yeah, there are a couple of forks. The code base I'm maintaining now is like the direct descendant of the main line, and the people who have done the forks are now on the GPSD list and have agreed to fold it back in. So those forks are going to go away in the future. Basically, they only happened because GPSD basically wasn't getting any maintenance for about 6 years. Boy, did I fix that.
I just want to make a quick point of view since we're talking about GPSD. The plugs for an application that I even had probably similar to what we have. I'm working on mapping as a roadmap application. I don't know what it's called, but it's in Cairo and plugging to GPS tracking and through the application. So it's just got my for desktop or CDS, just like today.
Do they get louder and slower?
Roadster. It's like the equivalent of like you've seen Microsoft 365, for example, for the desktop. Atlas.
Okay, thanks, Eric.